Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And it is another Tuesday night edition of Homefront. I'm so glad that you could join us this evening. We have a great show for you, talking about another facet of the home. Tonight we have an amazing guest, Scott Lively, who is an expert on all kinds of issues that affect the family. Scott is an attorney and lives in Springfield, Massachusetts, which is doubly special because I actually used to live in Massachusetts. Scott, welcome to our broadcast.
Hi, Cynthia. Good to be on your program.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people who are in our audience who care very much about what's happening to America. We're watching the fabric of our society crumble. And while the legislators are out there trying to scratch their heads and come up with new big government ideas for how to put it back together again, it seems obvious that the real problem is that the families are crumbling, the home is crumbling, and as families and homes are dissolving right before our eyes, we're not finding a way to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. So we love having you on our show. Perhaps you can start by telling us a little bit about your story.
I'm driving through the Great Plains of Wyoming right now, watching the sunset on Route 25 while we're talking. And it's just a reminder of that this is God's world, that we live on a planet that was created by an awesome God who gave us very clear direction about how we're supposed to live. And when our society was working back in the 1940s and the 1950s, the family was strong, marriage was intact. You could let your kids go out to play without worrying that they were going to be raped. You didn't have any of these kinds of social disasters that we're living through now. And it was because we were operating according to Christian values. And that doesn't mean everybody in the society was a Christian, because they weren't. But we had what they used to call a God-fearing society, where even the people who weren't Christians acknowledged that, yeah, there must be somebody out there who made this, and it's better to follow at least those Ten Commandments for the good of society. And unfortunately, the disintegration we're seeing has followed a pace with our turning away from that value system.
You know, I understand what you're saying because I have children that are multiple ages, and our oldest child is 31 years old, and our youngest one is 9 years old. And the way we are raising the 9-year-old is very different than the way we raised the 31-year-old. 31 years ago, you thought sometimes about what if your daughters were molested, but now you're fearful that the boys could be molested too. And it is very scary trying to parent children with more predators than ever. I didn't, you know, when my 31-year-old was a toddler and a small child, I warned him, you know, we said don't talk to strangers because, I don't know, you know, don't take candy when we were raised. Don't take candy
right,
from anybody.
Exactly, yeah.
And yet those incidences were very rare. Now you hear about things happening to children at the bus stop or in their daycare.
Yeah. Or on the bus, even mm-hmm. on the bus. You know, you asked me about my background, and, you know, I was an alcoholic and a drug addict for years. I my dad was mentally ill, and he started manifesting mental health problems when I was about 9 or 10. And I retreated into alcoholism when I was 12. And that made me, that whole problem of drugs and alcohol that I fell into, I mean, I wasn't the only one. My whole generation was susceptible to that. And I was especially susceptible because of the family problems that I had in my home. And so I was following all of the liberal policies that were being popularized to my generation. And so, you know, I was pro-abortion. I was pro-gay. I was a pot-smoking, you know, hippie. And I believed all of those in all of those policies, all of those values that were being sold by the progressives in those days. But, you know, it almost killed me living the way that they said to live. And by the grace of God, I surrendered my life to Jesus Christ in 1986 and was completely healed and delivered from drug and alcohol addiction. And my entire life changed. And I switched from one side to the other. And as my mind began to clear, I began to understand the truth of things and, you know, the importance of things like the family and the role of a dad and the role of a mom and the importance of an intact home and the importance of a family-centered community that where families can be safe. So today I'm the exact opposite of where I was. Along the way, I became an attorney. I'm a pastor. I have a theology degree and I have training in international human rights. I've been all over the world standing for family values. So I've seen this transformation from when I was a kid to the present time. I lived it on both sides. And I, like many people of my generation, you know, I saw things from the other side before I became a conservative.
Mm-hmm. So what year were you born?
1957.
Okay, and I was born in 1959. And what? Okay. So we're close enough. We remember
right.
How we were raised. And when I was, I mean, we were born after World War II. We were the baby boomers who, you know, the parents came home from the war and made our generation and talked about their great conquests. And it's sad that a lot of children today don't even know the World War II stories. My dad is a World War II veteran, and he's one of the few who are left at the age of 86. And he knows the stories, but we've forgotten, and we don't have that firsthand history.
Yeah,
but you wrote
that's true.
The book you wrote called The Pink Swastika, fascinating. I'm holding it in my hands right now, even though this is radio. You can't see me holding up the book, but it is subtitled Homosexuality in the Nazi Party. The old expression is those who don't remember their history are doomed to repeat it. And
oh, yes.
I'd like, you know, on the back, you ask three questions. You say, which top Nazi leaders were gay and was Adolf Hitler one of them? What is the answer?
Yes. The answer is yes. Well, actually, it depends on what your definition is of quote-unquote gay. If you mean exclusively homosexual, then probably not. I mean, certainly not, because he had relations with at least four women that we know of, but they weren't normal. They were very overt. He had a form of masochism that was very perverted. And all four of the women that we believe that he had relations with all tried to commit suicide. Two of them succeeded. So I think he was more of a pansexualist who sought refuge in the homosexual subculture because he had acceptance there that he wouldn't have had anywhere else. And that was his primary lifestyle also. He surrounded himself with masculine-oriented male homosexuals his entire life, and all that's, you know, very, very well documented in the book. This isn't something that I'm making up or spinning out of, you know, tiny threads trying to create something that isn't a strong foundation. It's very, very strongly, heavily documented.
Well, what started you on the path of wanting to research the Nazi history?
Well, after I got saved in 1986. I was living in Portland, Oregon when that happened. And the Lord took me from the lifestyle that I had before. You know, the way my conversion happened, I got down on my knees. I surrendered my life to Jesus Christ. It wasn't a casual prayer. And he took my life and began to transform it. And he opened my eyes to things that were going wrong in our society. First, the abortion issue, changed me, was seeing pictures of aborted babies for the first time. It just destroyed me. And I went full time into trying to stop abortion, just all by myself. I didn't join any group or anything. I just said, this has got to stop. Americans must not know what's going on. And then in the process of becoming a Christian activist, I met some people who told me I needed to connect with Lon Maybon and the Oregon Citizens Alliance. Long story short, I became the communications director for what was, I think, is still the most extensive grassroots Christian political network in the country. It's defunct now, but I don't think anybody ever got to the level of organization that we had there. In fact, Pat Robertson went to Oregon to see what we were doing before he started Christian Coalition. But it was during that time, Lon Maybon was first doing an abortion-related ballot measure, and that's how I got connected with it. And then the next election cycle, we switched to the homosexual issue. And we had ballot measure 9 in 1992, which would have amended the state constitution to define homosexuality as abnormal, unnatural, and perverse, which it is. But it was very radical language. It would have completely stopped the agenda dead in the water. And for that reason, the entire movement globally went after us. And I had my eyes opened to the reality of what this movement is and how these activists operate. And the key thing that they did during that campaign was to define everyone who opposed gay rights as being like the Nazis. And so this book, the Pink Swastika, was in reaction to that, to basically tell the truth, because the gays had actually been trying to create a gay holocaust for themselves out of very minor shreds of evidence since the late 1960s. And so my co-author is an Orthodox Jewish researcher, Kevin Abrams, and we published the book to counter their historical revisionism, and at the same time to just show people that the fingers are pointing in the wrong direction.
Well, you'll be happy to know that the latest information I received is that the Pink Swastika is available on Amazon for $25 now, above retail. It was only a $14.95 suggested retail. Now, I don't tell
authors.
Well,
that's pretty cheap. That's pretty cheap. You can see the first edition. A friend of mine was in Oceanside, California, I don't know how long ago it was, but he said he saw a copy of the first edition at $120. So if anybody's got a first edition, hold on to it, because it's going to be worth a lot of money.
Amazing. Well, did you change anything between the first edition and the third edition?
Oh, are you kidding? Oh, yes. Yeah, the first and second edition were pretty similar. And all I did with the second was just add like about 10 or 12 pages at the back end, because we needed to do a second print run because we ran out of books. So I added a few things. But then when the third edition came, when we went to do that, we expanded the book by probably 100 pages, and we interwove all of the additional material into the text and put in an extra chapter or two. And then when we did the fourth edition, we went to even broader expansion. It's not now the fourth edition. You have the third, based on what you're saying, it's on the back cover. The fourth edition is 400 pages of documentation on the topic. And we're working on the fifth, which is going to be an even bigger expansion. I've got a whole entire file cabinet full of additional material to bring in for the fifth.
Nice. Well, thank you for your research and what you're doing. I know you are in a position to see a broader landscape of the entire country. Most of us only know it from a small, our own family and those around us. But let me tell you my story of what happened a few months ago in Springfield, Missouri. As you may have heard on the internet, the city of Springfield, which is a very conservative part of Missouri, was proposing legislation that would really cause a hardship on businesses by saying that if they don't hire somebody who's homosexual, they could get into, people can sue them. And of course that I own a business myself. I have a Christian bookstore in O'Fallon. And the idea that government is trying to tell me who I can and cannot hire and invite people to file more lawsuits against businesses when they're already getting driven out of business with lawsuits is really very offensive. So you were at the one of the you came before I did. I got there the night they were going to, the city council was going to have its first reading, and I held a press conference outside the city hall, and I wanted to make some remarks and invite the press. I've been on city council for over 8 years myself, and I wanted to encourage the city council members to do the right thing, to be aware that what they're doing is destructive to the fiber of their business community. And I felt like it was warranted. Now, while I'm outside on the steps of the city hall, there were protesters protesting the pro-decency, pro-business community by bringing around their pro-homosexual signs. And I didn't mind them standing out there with their signs, but what was really bad, in bad taste, is some of them decided to shout over me. And
yeah, that's typical.
Yeah, well, you know what, though? I have 7 children, and I can beat them. I can win at this game. I do not. I do not.
Really,
let
it is.
Them.
It's very childish. Those tactics are very childish, so it takes a mom sometimes
takes
to put
mom.
Them in their place.
So I continued on, and when I got finished, the reporter from the Springfield News Leader came over to interview me, and he asked me, why are you being so hateful? And I had to say, look at what you just observed. Who is being hateful here? Who was the one being rude? I don't teach my kids that that's okay. When somebody is speaking, you sit down and be quiet. And if you don't want to listen, you can walk away, but you cannot be rude. And so he had a graphic illustration of how we are the civil ones and they're the ones.
Well, Cynthia, you know, you and I both know that that reporter was not an honest question, that the guy's on the other side, and that he's going to spin the story to support the homosexual movement. That's what the entire mainstream media does and has done since the 70s. That they are on the other side. In fact, I'm in the middle of writing an article that's titled "The False Witness of the American Press," and it's you know, and in the article, I mentioned that when I was in high school in the 1970s, my first career choice was to be a journalist, and I was right in the middle of it. I was going to a special alternative school that was set up like a hippie commune. I was a far left, pot smoking hippie type myself, and becoming a journalist was the perfect career because it not only was a way to use writing skills, and I wanted to be a writer, but even more than that, it was the way to change the world, and that's how it was being sold. And of course, from that point, even earlier than that, from the late 1960s, the radical left was basically getting their people into journalism in order to take it over, and they did. And ever since then, the mainstream media is 100% in the bag for every progressive item on the slate: abortion, homosexuality, evolution, opposition to every, you know, the Second Amendment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that what you experience is obviously just the consequence of that. But let me step back and address the ordinance itself. And yes, I was involved in it earlier. Mark Kaiser from Missouri, Reclaiming Missouri for Christ, had contacted me saying that, hey, this thing was coming down, and did I have any suggestions? And I was just dealing with another wave of negative publicity about my involvement in Uganda and other things like that. I've been attacked and all over the world for falsely preaching the gospel in Uganda and being blamed for an overly harsh bill that came forward because of that. But in any case, I told Mark, look, invite me down to Springfield, and what that will do is the other side will go crazy, and they will bring attention. There'll be a lot of controversy, and that's exactly what you want. These anti-discrimination policies, you have to understand, that's what you're talking, this ordinance is an anti-discrimination policy based on sexual orientation. It's one form of sexual orientation regulations that have been used as the primary vehicle for advancing the gay agenda, going all the way back to the beginning of the movement. And it really, one of these that contains the entire homosexual agenda, the entire tree of homosexual agenda, all the poisonous fruit is all contained in that seed. And once it gets planted in the soil of your local government or your state government, you can't get rid of it. And it keeps growing and growing. It produces everything that we've come to see as a problem. Gay pride parades, promotion of homosexuality to school children, homosexual marriage, anti-bullying campaigns that are there for no other reason but to silence and intimidate the school children into being pro-gay. All of those things are contained in that seed. And so I call them gay fascism bills. Homosexuals are not being discriminated against in employment and in housing. It isn't happening. You don't hear any stories about it. So this is it's a phony premise that they want to bring these in. What they really want to do is establish in the law the principle that disapproval of homosexuality is immoral and illegal. And that's what they do. And once we allow that to happen, then we basically are conceding their most fundamental premise. And then later, when you're trying to put pro-family policies out there, every time, even saying that you want to be opposed or in favor of traditional marriage is to discriminate under an anti-discrimination policy. And so keeping it out is number one priority. And so far, Springfield's been able to do that. Anybody that's listening that isn't already part of that needs to get involved and contact the city council members, show up at the protests and the rallies, and don't let this thing go into effect in conservative Springfield.
Well, that's good. I remember a few months ago, I went to University City. They had a city hall meeting also. And since I was involved in city government for many, many years, my deepest heart is to feel for them. I understand how those city council members and the aldermen feel when they're sitting on that side of the bench, and they're the ones looking at the constituents, and they're trying to do the right thing, but they're also trying to be pleasant. A lot of people who get elected to city positions don't get elected because they are so principled. They get elected because it's a popularity contest. So if you're the most popular person in that ward or that district, then you will win the election. It's all about how you shake hands and how you kiss the babies and how good your hair looks. And while it's possible for people who aren't very handsome to get elected, most of the time the citizens make decisions based on the superficials, not what is in a person's principled fiber. I mean, it's not, I want you because you've got such a great backbone. It's because you've got such a great smile. So nobody's even noticing the backbone. I remember when I asked one of my friends if he would run for city council, because we needed more good people with morals. And he went to my Sunday school class, and I walked up to him before church one day, and I said, hey, how about if you run for city council, and I'll go door to door and help you get elected even. Well, he got elected, and he won, and then we had a controversial vote take place. And I argued against it, and it wasn't right, and he was the deciding vote to make it happen. And I was so tortured over this. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm the one who recruited you, and then you betrayed me like this. What is up with that? And you know what he said? He was said, I was just trying to be amenable. I figured it wouldn't make that big of a difference. And this is the problem.
Wow.
They get this dynamic where they want to be accepted. Everybody likes to be liked. Everybody wants to be wanted and be Mr. Nice Guy. And I had to explain to him, you didn't run for Mr. Congeniality. You ran to make a difference. And unfortunately, the vast majority of the elected officials are trying so hard to make friends and influence people that they don't remember what this is all about. So,
well, what I teach somebody when I'm dealing with that is that what politicians at every level are influenced by is power. And if you've got power, now there's some people that are truly rooted in a ideology, either Christian values or progressive values, that, you know, that are true believers and that are there in order to advance their value system. But the majority of people are not. And they're going to, what they're impressed by is power. And if they believe, even if they agree with you, if you go in and try to talk to them, if you don't have any ability to influence their next campaign to help them to get reelected or to help them to be successful in office now, then you know they'll nod their head and be nice. But then the guy that comes in with a $10,000 war chest that wants to help you win, he's going to listen to them. And it comes down also to grassroots networks. And that's why the homosexuals are able to get so far in dealing with these city councils. And Springfield isn't the first place this has happened. It's been going all over the United States. They have been, they've done all the liberal cities. Now they're moving into conservative states and going to the most liberal cities in those states to try to push this there. And this is the place where we have the opportunity to stop this. The ball, maybe even roll it back, because these city council people, they may be influenced behind the scenes, and that's what happened in Springfield. I know just from experience is that the gays came, put pressure, and wanted to put this thing through, and they agreed to do it, and they believed that they could do it with very little public attention, and so that's what they started to do, and it wasn't until till I went down and I got two front page stories on this, and all of a sudden especially all the Christians in the city began paying attention to what's going on here. And that's all we needed, was to just create some controversy so that people woke up and realized they're trying to put something over on us. They're trying to bring a very, very left wing policy into a very conservative area. And that's why it hasn't gone through. And they were forced to back up. And like I told the activists, I said, you got to show them the pitchforks and the torches, guys, right? This isn't a time for being nice and going in and chatting about, you know, how really this is the wrong direction. You've got to show power. You have to show that you're angry enough about this that they're going to lose their jobs if they put this thing through. And that's the only way to stop it. And sure enough, they tabled it. And now then they formed a task force. This is what the left does, is that they never give up. All they do is postpone. And they believe that the conservatives are going to give up and they're going to go home after the first round, because that's usually what happens. But in this particular case, it hasn't happened. The conservatives have stayed together, and they're tracking this task force as it goes along, and it's due to come out with its recommendation in June. Of course, you know what the recommendation is going to be. It's to go ahead and put this through, right? Because that's what they want to happen. A true victory would have been for them to say, we're not going to do this, But they didn't. All they did is say, well, we're just not going to do it now. And so that's why the people who have family values and conservative principles really need to stay on the ball and let these guys know that you're not going to tolerate this going into your city. Once it's in there, you just can't get rid of it.
Well, thank you for sharing that. You know, I understand how hard it is to speak up because they're trying to attach. I was there for the five-hour public hearing when they started at 6 and they said they'd be done by 10, but it went on and on and on. And there were people trying to shame anyone who spoke out against this new ordinance.
Yeah, of course.
The tool of trying to, you know what, when you tell a person who's a good, moral, decent Christian that you're being hateful, and we know that Christ commands us to love everybody, that is about the most hurtful thing you could say to somebody. Wait a minute.
That's right. They're accusing you of breaking the second great commandment.
Yes. And
that's what that is.
It is so hard to argue, no, I'm not, when the truth is that we really, it is an act of love for our fellow man to try and contain our standards. You know, the History Channel has a new show series they're doing right now. Yes, the Bible. And
Well, before you go to that, Cynthia, you go to that, let me just respond to that point, because it's absolutely essential for anyone listening to know how to deal with that. First of all, you have to realize that when they make the accusation of hatred, that it's not that they believe it. It's a psychological tactic. It's a carefully crafted psychological tactic to try to silence people who disagree, especially Christians. And you cannot let that succeed. I have on my website defendthefamily.com. You can go there on the front page. There's a link to my book. I have written a textbook called Redeeming the Rainbow, and you just click on the book cover that's on the right side of the page and read the foreword and the introduction to that book. And you'll see the introduction especially just directly with that whole idea. And you'll get a lot more information than I give you over the radio right now. But you have to understand that this, we're in a culture war. It's a real war about worldview. And whoever worldview prevails is going to rule the future, and they're going to reshape America according to what they believe. And we can no longer count on having a society based in a Christian worldview, because the Christians have backed away and have sort of abdicated their stewardship responsibility. And the progressives have moved in to fill the void. Now, some Christians are waking up and realizing that this really is a war, and that it's a winner-take-all battle, but most of them haven't, and that's what this is all about. That's why when they call you a hater, it isn't just because their feelings are hurt. It's because they know they have to shut you up, because they can't allow your worldview to be articulated and accepted by the people sitting in those seats in the city council chamber and by the others. You know, sitting in the audience listening to the arguments. They have to shut you up, and they're going to do it one way or the other. And so this is very, very serious, and you cannot allow them to shut you up.
There were some people being accused of being haters, but really I didn't see or hear any of that. In fact, what was sad is there were more people who were on the perverted side of the issue, and then there were the people on the moral side of the issue, and it really gave a skewed impression. The way the clerk took the names, she asked everybody when they filled out the card to say whether they're for or against the ordinance, so that she could take them one for, one against, one for, and one against. And sadly, some of the people who were promoting this horrible ordinance lied on their card.
Okay. What a surprise.
Yeah. And they took more people who were in favor of this bad ordinance than the people who were going to speak against it, and then they ran out of time. So they never equalized it. And if the person running the meeting had been principled, as soon as he realized that he had two proponents in a row, he could have shut down the second one and said, sit down, you're out of turn, we'll now take somebody who's on the other side. But that did not happen. They let them all continue.
That's right, and because they cheat. They lie and they cheat. And that's why you can't let them get away with doing that. If you're a person of principle and you understand the importance of having, you know, fundamental family values for society, and you've had your eyes open to the fact that the other side lies and cheats and steals and whatever they can, the end justifies the means for them. At that point, you have a moral obligation to stand up to them. You can't let them basically cheat their way into all the seats of power and change the rules to suit themselves. You can't do that for the sake of your family and posterity. You have to stand up to them, just like the Americans had to stand up to the Nazis in World War II. We couldn't have stayed, you know, minded our own business across the ocean. We had to take that on because the consequences of not doing it were existential.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have the ability to run every city in the state of Missouri. But if I were running that meeting that night, we would have had a little more fairness and honesty. And I don't know what's going to happen there, but I know that it's up to everybody to be vigilant because it's not as innocent as it seems. You know, the problem now that we have, years ago, if there were biological reasons why homosexuals could not reproduce. Two men don't make a baby and two women don't make a baby, but with the modern marvels of fertility clinics, there are more and more people who are availing themselves of those services. I had a bill that I was filing in the Missouri State Legislature pertaining to sperm donation, and I got information from a supporter of my bill who said that about a third of the people using these fertility clinics are women who are homosexual and they want to have a baby. And another third are women who just claim to be single moms. And here we've been thinking for years that the purpose of these fertility clinics is to help nice married couples have babies. But as these
And we know what happened, Cynthia, with Pastor Miller from Virginia. Are you familiar with that story?
No, tell us that story.
Well, this was a case of two women that went into a homosexual relationship and they got so-called married in Vermont, and one of them got impregnated through a fertility clinic and had a baby. Well, after the process of having the baby changed her life, and she decided to renounce lesbianism and go back to her Christian roots. She was raised as a Baptist. And so she left her lesbian partner, and that lesbian partner then sued for custody of the child, and a judge got involved, and because Vermont was treating this as if it was a real family and real marriage, that they gave this lesbian partner who had absolutely no blood relation whatsoever with this baby visitation rights. But unfortunately, when the mom dropped the child over to this lesbian's house, every time she came home, she was traumatized. There was stuff going on there that was really not right. And so the mom refused to allow any more visitation. She moved out of the state to get away. Well, the judge in charge of this case gave custody, took the child away from the mom to give to this, you know, former lesbian partner. But fortunately, the mom was out of the state. The state of Vermont couldn't get a hold of the child to physically hand her over to this woman. But they were working on it. And in the interim, this pastor from Virginia helped her through sort of like an underground railroad to get out of the country and into a South American country that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the United States. And this pastor was just convicted of this and sentenced to 27 months in jail for helping this Christian mom protect her child from this vindictive lesbian that had been awarded custody, full custody. This is this is the kind of thing that happens. That this is the fruit of the anti-discrimination policy. That's how all these laws start there. That's what's going on with the Boy Scouts of America too, Cynthia. Why is the Boy Scouts on the verge of giving in to allowing homosexuals as scout leaders when they fought and won a Supreme Court case that grants them the legal right to do it? Why would that happen? It's because these homosexual activists have relentlessly pursued the Boy Scouts. They don't care about the Supreme Court ruling. They have continued to go after them in every possible way that they can, and they finally found the lever that they think can work, and that's to go to the corporate donors, the big corporations that give money to the Boy Scouts, and to go to them, and all these guys have got anti-discrimination policies in their company. And these anti-discrimination policies were put in there to guarantee that homosexuals wouldn't have a problem with employment in these companies. And yet once the policy's in place, the gays just disregard the original intent of it, and they use it like a sword against everybody. And so now they go to these corporations and say, how can you give money to this organization that discriminates when you have an anti-discrimination policy on your books? And the corporation is saying, hey, I guess you're right. We're going to have to stop giving, $500,000 a year to the Boy Scouts of America because they're not allowing homosexuals to be scout leaders. Do you see how dangerous these are? That every single one of the lawsuits that you've heard about in the news, the bed and breakfast owner, the wedding, the bakery that didn't want to make the wedding cake for the lesbian wedding, the card printing company that's in the same situation, all of those lawsuits are all the direct result of the anti-discrimination policy.
Well, you probably don't have another story in your file that I'll add from Missouri. There was a lesbian couple who, again, they both had babies through artificial insemination, and they both found a renegade judge who would grant them permission to adopt each other's baby. Now, in Missouri, we have a constitutional amendment already in place that said marriage is only between a man and a woman. And therefore, you cannot adopt a baby unless you're married to the child's mother, or if the mother terminates parental rights, then you can adopt the baby. But there is no legal vehicle whereby a baby can be adopted if the mother does not terminate parental rights, or if you're married to the mother, and we don't allow marriage of two women. So, the reason that's so interesting is, and I like the law, because what would happen if a mom let anybody adopt her baby? I mean, if you don't love the mom enough to marry her, then you don't love her enough to be the parent to her children. So it keeps ill-motivated people out of the family. Nevertheless, they broke up, as they do about 87% of the time. Is that your statistic?
I haven't even followed statistics. I just use the self-evident truth arguments.
Okay,
I don't worry about statistics.
My numbers are that 87% of the time, people who are homosexual do not stay in a committed relationship with each other. So when they broke up, the one mom taunted the other one and threatened her that if you don't play by my rules, I'm going to do a DFS hotline and get your baby. And the mother was so distraught by that, she committed suicide. And this is serious consequences.
Yeah.
So after she died, the other lady, who is no biological relation to the child whatsoever, waved around her piece of paper she got from the judge. Now, the family of the deceased had no idea that baby had gone through a legal adoption. And now the mother who's got the two girls is going around Ronnie, not only did she get to walk away with the child, and the family of the child, the biological family, has no access to her, but she's claiming a Social Security death benefit for both her daughter and this other girl. So
yeah,
she's getting money from the federal government for as if the other parent died, when for both children. I think, you know, there's a point where we have to look at
yeah.
our public policies and ask, what have we done to ourselves?
Yeah. Well, it's you know, it's one horror story after another, and you know, this is the consequence of abandoning reason in dealing with marriage and family. And you know, and it, this story isn't unusual. It's happening all over the United States, and it's going to get worse because society is continuing to shift into the mode that this is just the new norm. And unfortunately, if people who have a biblical worldview don't actively compete for control to decide what our future is going to be, then we're just simply going to lose all of the levers of power, all of the seats of power, and it's just going to go down the rat hole.
Well,
it's just that simple.
I agree. The biggest problem we're faced with is, as there are more and more children being raised in these types of situations, they're becoming homosexual sympathizers, because they would never want to say anything against, even though they were denied from having both a mother
yeah.
and a father.
Well, they're also becoming homosexuals themselves too, Cynthia. This is the number of kids. This is one statistic. I don't know the number per se. But the stories that have come out is that the children being raised in homosexual households are significantly more likely to be homosexual themselves, which supports the environmental theory of the cause of homosexuality in the first place. You're right. This is compounding now.
Trying to normalize it. I told you I moved to Missouri from Massachusetts, and my husband and I went back to the our old high school in Needham, Massachusetts, near Boston.
Uh-huh.
And I was surprised that there was a pink upside-down triangle outside of many of the classroom doors. We went back just because one of our friends works there, and it was kind of charming to see our high school where we graduated in 1978. We went back just a few years ago, and I asked my friend, so what's with the upside-down pink triangle? And it's surprisingly, it looks just like the cover of your book. And he explained to me,
yeah.
that's a safety zone. That means that if you're a homosexual and you're being harassed, you can go in that classroom and find a teacher who will protect you and sympathize with you. Well, where are the teachers who are going to protect and sympathize the kids who don't think that's okay? There is no protection. If you're a Christian now, you might as well call yourself a persecuted minority, because you're not even allowed to exercise your own freedom of speech without the fear of harassment.
That's right. And, yeah, I had the same experience. I went to my own high school, Mohawk Trail Regional High School in Western Mass, and the same thing, the same pink triangle. And, you know, that harkens back to the days when, like I said, remember when I said earlier in the show that they were trying to fabricate a gay Holocaust. And that's what their symbol was. The pink triangle was the symbol of the entire gay rights movement. And one of the things that the pink swastika did in the challenge to that fabrication was to stop that, because they could no longer go forward promoting the idea that there had been a gay Holocaust, because there wasn't. And there were 5,000 to 15,000 homosexuals who did die in work camps, not the death camps, unless they happen to be Jewish or something, but they tried to exaggerate it to put it on a scale of what happened to the Jews. It's just a lie. But that pink triangle, they were using that for that purpose. That's one of the last remaining uses of the inverted pink triangle, is the in the schools. And Kevin Jennings, I think, or one of those guys, chose to keep using that in the schools. And they still promote that myth of the gay Holocaust to the children. They just don't dare to do it publicly because they don't have control outside of the classroom enough to be able to stop people from exposing the falsehoods.
Well, going back to, tell us what's happening in Uganda. You said you were over there working on some projects.
Yes, I went to Uganda in early 2009 for a seminar. Uganda is a country that's been in revival for years, and they have been very successful through Christian values of turning the country around from having the highest to the lowest AIDS rate in Africa. Well, the globalists were very unhappy with that, and they began trying to push the sexual revolution into Uganda as a way to sort of trip up the Christian policies. And in response to that, the Ugandans were going to strengthen their law against homosexuality, because that's who's really driving this whole thing. And so I was invited ahead of that process to sort of educate some of the leaders of the society on what this agenda is and how it works. After I left, unfortunately, the law they did come out with was way too harsh, in contradiction to my advice to the Ugandan Parliament, and included the death penalty for a category called aggravated homosexuality. And as a result of that, I was then blamed for being the mastermind of that bill, even though that's not something that I supported. And
wow.
That's what's been going on there. And now I've been sued in federal court in Massachusetts for crimes against humanity by a group of Ugandan homosexuals represented by a Marxist law firm out of New York called the Center. Oops, there goes my dog.
Unbelievable.
I'm going to step outside the vehicle. Anyway, so that's what's going on. We just had our motion to dismiss on January 7th. The judge hasn't ruled on whether he's going to dismiss their case or not. And I'm sort of the canary in the coal mine kind of a figure, because I will not stop speaking the truth about this agenda. I've spent 20 years establishing credentials and studying and in order to be an effective an advocate and activist on this topic, so they want to make an example of me, and they want to intimidate other people by that example. Not, don't you dare stick your head up and say homosexuality is wrong and our society shouldn't mainstream it.
Well, my question
so that's what's going on.
Yeah, I love you doing that, because unless we're brave, and you think about the founding fathers of this country, were willing to take a bullet. They were willing to take the gallows. They didn't care what it cost them. They were principled to the max. They were not about to let any bully cower them into a corner, and they fought. They bled and died for our freedom of speech. We dare not take that for granted, and we dare not give that up. That is the last vestige of our freedom. And thank you for standing strong and not letting them intimidate you. Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I'd like you to explain to us how we can win. How can we preserve our families and our culture?
Well, we need to restore a biblical worldview in our own lives and in our circles of influence. That's the only way that we restore things. Unfortunately, most of us have been raised in a secular humanist public school system. We have allowed progressive left-wing activists who have come to control the entertainment and the news media, colleges and universities, public schools, really the most influential institutions that shape our culture. They have now been sitting in these seats of power and influence for a long time, and they have spun for us a false picture of reality that we all kind of, even if we don't agree with it, we sort of accept it as that's just the way things are. It's not the way things are. Unplug yourself from the TV. Stop accepting the perspective of these people in the news, in the movies, and get back to the Bible. Stand on the truth of God. Think like a Bible-believing Christian. Respect and honor the Ten Commandments and live by them. And don't let the contradictions to those things influence your mind. And the more you shift your own brain away from, you know, you unplug from the matrix, right? The more you unplug from the matrix, the more clearly you will begin to think, and the easier it will be to see how to rescue your own family and how to rescue your community from all of this progressive nonsense that's being foisted on us. That's the answer. Get your mind right. And that means getting back to your Creator and how He told you to live.
Well, what is your message to the churches? The 40% who still go to churches are finding very little content. When's the last time you ever heard a sermon about the rightness of a family having a mom and a dad and being married for life?
Yeah, well, that's why you work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, like the Bible says. That you read your own Bible, that you do your own study, you take responsibility for yourself and stop abdicating that responsibility to a pastor who may or may not be on the same page with you. Just, you've got to take responsibility, take authority for your own life and for your family and for your community, and just simply do what's right. Look around and find out what needs to be done around you. What's the most important thing that's not being done, that someone else isn't doing, and do that thing. And ask the Lord to equip you and train you for it as it happens, as you do it. And He will, because He wants you to do what's right. And he wants you to influence other people to do what's right. And that's what changes things.
Great. Can you give out your website and tell us again what we're going to find on your website if we go there?
Yes, defendthefamily.com. Almost everything I've written is on there. You can reach me by email. There's a video in the upper right-hand corner titled the Global Threat of Homosexuality. You should watch that video. All of my books you can actually download from there. Everything I've written is for free.
Wait a minute.
The Rainbow Book?
You mean my $25 book, The Pink Swastika, is available for free on your website?
Yes. Well, you don't get the paper version, but you get the electronic version. And I'm not oriented toward commerce. I'm not in this to make money. I'm in this to equip Christians to be able to advocate the biblical worldview about the family. And we need to all get off our butts and get to work. Or we're not going to be able to turn things around. The window is closing, and the time is very short. It's urgency.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and explaining what we can do. You are a beacon. You are a desperately needed clarion call. Scott, thank you for joining us. We are
thank
thrilled.
You, Cynthia. God bless you.
Anytime.
I got to run. God bless you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink governments smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.